transformational change. Real people, real pain, real hopelessness, real healing. Witness firsthand the challenges that men and women from around the world faced head on, and how through their adversity they became stronger and happier. Battling a life-threatening illness, surviving an abusive relationship, overcoming addiction, suffering the heartbreaking loss of a child, wrestling with self-sabotaging thoughts, losing and finding love. These are just a few of the transformational stories that will encourage you and change your perspective in chaos to clarity. A global voice of the contributing authors bears their souls for you. Their unfettered honesty is a gift to all and connects us to the butterfly effect of universal oneness. Just as the flapping of a tiny wing can change weather patterns around the world, a small inspiration may impart positively on another's life. The tears shed from these stories may make waves on distant shores, and your peals of laughter may become someone's breath of life. Change is part of the natural order of life. In this inspirational book, authors Caganello and Canevas offer their expertise on the spirituality and psychology of change and explain why change is not only necessary, it's good for you. Welcome to the heart of our shared humanity. Discover hope for the future and a blueprint for your life in these life-changing pages. I'm Richard Dugan, your host on this special edition, a month-long look at the book, Chaos to Clarity. The entire month is devoted to authors from this book to help you and encourage you. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And keep this in mind. I have declared the year 2020, the year of perfect vision. So, let's go from chaos to clarity. Let's go from change to perfect vision here in 2020. The entire month of January, stay with us here on Tell Me Your Story. Now, let's go find out about change in chaos to clarity. And on this program today, we are going to be continuing our conversation with authors from the book Chaos to Clarity. It is published by Sacred Stories Publishing. That's where you can go to their website, sacredstoriespublishing.com, to find out more about Chaos to Clarity. And as a reminder to those of you listening to this program, whether it be the podcast or the radio program, I have declared 2020, the year of perfect vision, which is so appropriate as we talk about chaos to clarity. And we certainly hope that you will join us in that endeavor. Today's program is going to be focusing on another one of the fine authors who is a part of this great project that we have taken on. And her name is Lynn Forrester. She is an author. She's a retired police officer, also a former member of the Olympic shooting team, so I'll watch my step, and the first female member of the elite SWAT team. Again, I will watch my step even more carefully. She is a columnist for Biz Catalyst 360 and has published a children's book entitled Children's Garden, and she is also a member of, as I was at birth, a member of the Catholic Church, and she's in Houston, Texas. And Lynn, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you, Richard. I appreciate it.
You're one of the contributing authors to this great work that has been put together by the folks over at Sacred Stories Publishing. And you have a particular work in particular that is very interesting. And one of the things that you talk about knowing life is precious. And yes. It's something that I think that a lot of folks, they put a lot of energy into that aspect, that concept, if you will. It's one of those things that I'm really trying to help people to understand that their life has meaning. Talk to us from your standpoint and your story. And actually, I guess I should be a little clearer on this, too. And that is that you actually have two items in this work. One has to do with the words of wisdom section, having to do with if I knew then what I know now. But also, you also have another article in the book, a story, A Mad Dog Loves Grim Reaper. And I think they kind of tie in one to one another. But let's start with the aspect of, I want to start with that, the words of wisdom and that life is precious.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. I had prepared for that article before I got on the podcast with you, but I actually had switched over to the Mad Dog Loves Grim Reaper. So I apologize for not having the book in front of me and being able to go to it and respond to it. Unless you have it in front of you and you want to ask me a couple of questions, I can do that.
Well, I do. I mean, and obviously you've written the story itself. Can you give us sort of a synopsis as to how this particular story came about for you? It's kind of funny in one sense. I'll put a little context from my perspective.
Okay.
And that is that, not that I would consider myself a mad dog, and we keep referring to death as with all these wonderful terms of the Grim Reaper.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there's a little quote here that's at the front of the article. The true definition of love is caring about the health and well-being as well as happiness of other persons to a greater degree than your own, and we do that for each other. And I've often thought, if it were my time, in other words, if I walked out of the studio today and a bus decided, you know, the good Lord decided it's his time, punch his ticket, I'm good to go. That's not to say that there isn't a lot more that I want to do. There's a lot more that I want to do. But by the same token, I use this analogy. They say that if aliens are going to abduct you, there's nothing you can do about it. Hey, and if the good Lord's going to call you home, honestly,
there's nothing you can do about it.
So it's like we need to make peace with that.
That's right. That's right. But it's also to know that this isn't the end of one's life when they leave here. And I base that on my strong faith that I have as a Catholic. But I think in regards to the Mad Dog Loves Grim Reaper, if I may, I'll just kind of give you a little excerpt as to how I ended up getting that name Grim Reaper, and then how it related to the person that I'm now married to, that I would have never thought in my wildest dreams that it would happen. But God has a plan for everybody, and you don't have a choice in that either, I think. Sometimes if you listen, you can find out, but most of the time you have no idea. Mm-hmm. But the Grim Reaper came as a result when I was in training. I had unknowns to me, my trainee at the time, who had a nickname of Mad Dog, decided that he was going to, if he could break me, then I wasn't worthy enough to be in law enforcement. And so he was the last person that I was given for my training after going through about three other training officers. And so he, unbeknownst to me, went into the watch commander and said, look, every dead body you get, I want it, because I want my training to have that experience. And that's how it came that after about the fourth dead body call that I was dispatched upon, I became known as the Grim Reaper.
Oh, jeez.
So as a result of that, it was kind of, thrown to me in that way. But my past experience and my childhood and everything that happened growing up, I'm currently in the process of actually writing another book called Miracles of a Child, because in honesty, I shouldn't be here today with all of the stuff that I've experienced in my life. And so when I talk about the true love thing, you know, you're wanting the best for the other person. And my trainee at the time, who was nicknamed Mad Dog, we didn't have any kind of connection other than he was my training officer. We both went on to separate lives, as the story tells, and he had a family, I had a family. But in the end, I do feel that God had his hand in this reunion after 40 years.
Well, I look at the events in one's life. I find it fascinating how many people have regrets, which basically is saying, I wish that I could go back and change that. I wish I could go back and remove that from my history because. And the reality is that if you could, even if you could, and you did, that would immediately change the person you are in the present. Because it's because of those experiences, because of the fact that you were exposed to this, that, and the other thing, you were putting yourself in harm's way, whatever the case might be, that you've become who you are. I, matter of fact, it's interesting. You talk about many instances in your life, in your past, where you shouldn't be here. And what came to my mind was an experience I had when my wife, my present wife and I, were in Ireland. And we were on the island of Inishmore and in the Aran Islands, just off the coast. And we had made our way to one of these prehistoric forts. And there had they had this giant rectangular slab, almost like the monolith that you see in 2001 A Space Odyssey. Only this one was laying flat on the ground. And there was about a 2 or 3 foot extension out over the cliff.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to go out onto the edge of that thing and take pictures, you know, almost a 360, if you will, or what have you, from horizon to horizon, picture of the surf rolling into the what have you below and on and on and on. So I did. And I went out there and I took the pictures and my wife is going, what the heck do you think you're doing? Because literally there is nothing. There are no railings. And so I went out there and I came back off of the thing. And of course, while I'm out there, she's going, so tell me where the life insurance policy is again.
Smart lady.
Yeah. Well, here's what was really strange about it. I had no fear. Absolutely zero fear.
And why do you think you didn't have the fear?
I think I was too focused on wanting to get those pictures and of course, being there. I mean, I had never planned on ever being in overseas in my entire life. And the next thing I know, this was actually our second trip to Ireland. And I wanted to get those pictures, and it was just so spectacular. But the funny thing is when we went back to get on board the boat to go back to the mainland, if you will, although Ireland is an island anyway. We went go back to the bigger island. There was a gift shop. And in that gift shop, there was a giant mural on the wall behind the checkout section. And it was actually a blown-up photograph taken from a helicopter of the cliff that I had just been sitting on. And you could see the land. You could see the edge of the cliff, that slab. And you could see down all the way to the ocean and including the ocean. And I then all of a sudden had a perspective. And that night, as we are laying snug and warm in our cozy stone cottage in bed, the fear hit. It was unbelievable. And every once in a while, I get one of those twinges of, oh my God, I could have been, I would have fallen and all of that stuff started running through my mind.
Right. But, well, you know, they say, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. What is it they say?
Well, they say in police work, you know, if you don't have fear, you better worry because there has to be a certain element of fear. But I don't put myself in a totally isolated place than anybody else. But I really don't have a fear of death. And I think the reason I don't is because I know what's waiting for me on the other side, as far as I believe in heaven, and I believe in the fact that that's the place that I want to end up in. And this place on earth is just temporary. I don't get into that new age or anything like that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that for me, specifically, I do not focus on anything but what's on the other side as far as with God and being with Him. And so I figure, okay, if it's my time, it's my time. But I have a responsibility too. And that is that whatever job God gives me on this earth, and in that case, it was my experience, my law enforcement career. Prior to that, I was in nursing. So I was, and I lost my mom when I was 13. I found her after she'd been dead for 8 hours. And I just, I look at death in a little bit different way. And I just recently, as a matter of fact, a week ago Sunday, gave a presentation to about 80 people on preparation for death, but not in a morbid way. It's in a happy way. And so reality of what you saw, what you kind of thought could happen to you finally hit you. Mm-hmm. It's very normal. And it's just the fact that when you thought about getting the pictures, that's all you thought about. But for me, I don't look at it that way.
And I stood atop a 25-story building in Phoenix where I was working on the seventh floor. We went to the roof to just kind of look around and take a look at the equipment we had up there.
Right.
I went over to the edge. Now, I don't have, that's a funny way to put this, I don't have a fear of heights. Uh-huh. I have height anxiety. In other words, I'll go up there, okay? But once I'm up there, I start looking around going, ah. So,
yeah,
I
can relate to that because I was just recently up in Washington at Deception Pass. And I don't know if you've ever been there.
Have not.
It's beautiful country, God's creation for sure. Yeah. And you're on this bridge that overlooks about a 400-foot fall.
Wow.
And I'm not afraid of height either. But being on that bridge and looking down at that moment just for those split seconds, I thought, I just can't imagine even taking a thought of jumping off of this thing.
I've often thought it would be interesting to take a flight in what it's the weightlessness plane, and it'll take you up, and then they go up and down and up and down to simulate weightlessness.
Right.
And in essence, you're really falling. That's how they create that and so forth. And mm-hmm. I've often wondered, and it's a curiosity, but not in a morbid way, I wonder what it's like to fly or even to fall without hurting mm-hmm. oneself. Make sure my chute opens if that's how I'm going. But
yeah.
It's interesting how there are people in either in our lives or in this world who, like the free climbers. Where
right.
there are no ropes, no nothing. It's just their hands and their feet and maybe a sack of chalk. And they're climbing the face of and so forth. And I have to chuckle, respectfully so, when I hear the news come on and say, so-and-so, the world's most accomplished free climber died today. And then, of course, people come on and say that, he fell. And, well, he died doing what he loved doing. And I said, no, he didn't. He did not die doing what he loved doing. Falling was not what he loved doing.
What he loved doing. Right?
And he loved
exactly.
climbing, but not falling.
Yep. Yep, that's very true. That's a good way to look at it.
But here's the interesting thing. You have, as a police officer, you have been you put in harm's way, I'm sure, time and time again. And I'm going to guess, based upon what you've already shared, that you didn't have any qualms about it because of your intent in terms of being an officer of the law, being there to protect and to serve.
Well, my whole, that's true. I mean, I knew that the career was meant for me in the sense that I was only the third female to ever be hired on the department at the time. And, but there was just something that I had that said, I can do this. And why do I want to do it? I want to do it to help others. I'll give you an example, probably again, of God's intervention in our lives. And I'm sure you can probably relate to some of it. But I was given a call of a young gal, 12 years old, that had been sexually assaulted by her uncle. Being the only female on the department, I was way up north, was listening to the call. And then after about 45 minutes, I was dispatched to the call. And so when I got there, the officer that was handling it says, you know, I've been here 45 minutes. I can't get anything out of her. I'm just really frustrated. So could you go in and see what you could do? And I thought, okay. So I walked in and this little gal was sitting on the bed, and you could tell she was emotionally distraught and stuff. And I walked in and I said, introduced myself, told her my name. And I said, you know, I said, I understand what you're going through. And she looked at me with, brought her head up, looked at me, and with the most hated look said, there's no way you understand what I'm feeling or what I'm going through. And so I sat down next to her. I didn't put my arm around her or anything, but I did sit down next to her. And I said, you know what? Let me tell you a story. And I told her a story of my own experience that was identical to hers. And it was after that she opened up and gave me all of the information that the officer had struggled with for 45 minutes to get. And I came out and I gave it to him, and he said, you know, I don't, what did you say to her? And I said, it doesn't matter. I said, what matters is you have the information. And so I looked back on that later on that night, because I had my own daughter at the time. And I thought, there's a reason God placed me in this line of work.
And I find it interesting. There have been those times when I know other people feel this, that they don't feel as though they are where they're supposed to be. They feel a disconnect.
True.
They feel a disconnect.
Well, and I think that I could be wrong. And a lot of what I say to you, Richard, it's my own personal opinion, so I don't put it on anyone else mm-hmm. who might be listening to the podcast or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I've always said that in life, there's 10% of every vocation that a person has no business being in. And you can see where that happens depending on what you're doing. In my first career as a nurse starting out, there was, nurses there in training that had no business being in it because they didn't have the compassion. But again, they chose that line of work. Same way in law enforcement. I was in a dominated field by males that had no interest in having a female out on the street as their backup or anything else. And yet, that didn't make them, because they put on the uniform, a better officer than myself. Because as it turns out, there was a couple that ended up leaving shortly after because they couldn't handle the work. So, like I said, there's 10% of the population out there for every vocation they have no business going into.
Mm. And I think that's really important, because if you don't, I mean, just because your father did it and his father before him did this, there's a one program that I didn't really want to watch at first, but I'm kind of intrigued by the dynamics of the family. I didn't care too much for Blue Bloods when it first came out on television, but it's kind of grown on me, and I'm watching this dynamic. And then, of course, they talk about, oh, this is the family business, so to speak.
Right.
Not that every member of the family became a police officer, but needless to say.
Yeah.
And I know that happens in a lot of families where that it's like, oh, you've got to carry on the family tradition of whatever it is, you know, officer or what have you.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't agree with you more from the standpoint that, you know, people really need to find their own way and their life's purpose, as it were. And I think that's something to talk about as well. When you talk about knowing that life is precious in this context, isn't that kind of what we're dealing with from the standpoint of even our own personal faith?
Right.
I kind of came up with this. Well, another analogy, because I worked for 15 years back in the 80s, early 90s for a Christian radio station. And I also was also contracted to produce one of the programs I was given all of the materials called the Radio Family Rosary Hour. The irony was that it was only a half hour long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one of the conclusions that I came to, because I kept hearing these messages about from the wide variety of different philosophies within the Christian community about how, you know, we're just lowly worms. You know, we're just this, you know, we're sinful creatures. And you know, just, you know, there was nothing good about us whatsoever. And that's the only reason for the sacrifice, right? I thought, wait a minute. Hold the phone here. It doesn't make any sense. Because if we had no value before the sacrifice, there never would have been one.
Right.
And what that told me was that we were beyond pricelessness, and that was why the sacrifice was made.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Life is precious in so many different ways, and I don't think that even our young people today realize how precious life is. I think they, some of them, you know, I know there's a lot that are struggling with, you know, this mental breakdown of how our society is. But, you know, when you, and again, it's my opinion, when you start removing God from everything that is worth anything from age after age after age, look at the deterioration that's transformed and where it is today. And so with life being precious, we want to take care of our young. We want to take care of our children. You know, I live in Houston, and the I-10 is the number one traffic corridor for human trafficking. And human trafficking is on the is the number one the number one thing that's happening with our youth right now. When we look at it, not just suicide and not just drugs, but also human trafficking. And I don't think people realize how very serious it is. They hear about it, but I don't think they realize how serious it is and how very quickly.
Well, we're hearing about it more and more here, obviously here in California as well.
Absolutely,
especially
absolutely.
Central and Southern.
Right, right. And but the onset of it is that, like, for example, I recently did a study not too long ago on children in other countries that are abducted, and it's now come into the United States, that they're abducted. And the only purpose is one of two things. It's to either obtain their organs and sell them, because there's a big market for that, or it's to put them into prostitution at a young age. And so life is very, very precious. And I see sometimes mothers and dads and, you know, especially in restaurants, I mean, you walk in and the family doesn't even communicate anymore. The kids are on the phone, the parents are on the phone. Nobody's talking. Nobody's having a conversation.
Yeah.
And a lot of things.
I've even had people nearly run into me walking the main street here in Santa Barbara, State Street, just as I'm trying to go get some lunch or something. And they're just looking down and it's like, hello.
Right.
I almost want to yell at them, hey, get off your phone. Watch where you're going. Yeah. You know, and it's like, okay, just calm down.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was often thinking if I could do an interview, I would love to just interview randomly about maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 people and ask them one specific question. And I would ask them, how do you determine that life is precious to you? Mm. And just to see the variance of comments that you would get. It's like if I could dress myself up as a homeless person one day and just go and stand on a corner to see how much money I could make in one day. I mean, there's so many different avenues of things that you just wonder what goes through people's minds. But yeah, the biggest thing is our young.
Lynn Forrester is our guest, and we are talking about her contribution to Chaos to Clarity, and we certainly hope that you will avail yourselves of the opportunity to find out more about what this is all about. It is Sacred Stories of Transformational Change. The foreword's by Bernie Siegel, who we've had on this program before. And we are so excited about being a part of this project. And as I mentioned at the front end of this program, this is 2020 is the year of perfect vision, and how appropriate it is that we are focusing on this particular book. Matter of fact, Lynn, one of the things that that we are doing with this series of interviews for the entire month of January, and this program on this radio station has three different airings a week. Well, we're going to be featuring a different author from each from these different categories within the context of Cast to Clarity in each one of the three airings throughout the entire month of January. So you're talking about 12 or 13 or possibly 15. I haven't looked at the calendar and how many Sundays and Mondays there are. Right. Because I think this is really, really important. I think that people need to start taking a look at the fact that maybe in spite of or maybe because of what is going on in the world today, locally, regionally, nationally, internationally, we need to start waking up more. The different sections, by the way, of the book, part one is love and relationships, crazy little things, the crazy little thing called love. There's also health and well-being. I'll stand by you is the subtitle. Grief and loss, let the circle be unbroken. Life, journey, and identity, the long and winding road, as well as words of wisdom. If I knew then what I know now. There's a song in there somewhere, I'm sure. And you have contributed to both of these areas, that one of the parts of the book itself, as well as the words of wisdom.
No, yeah, as a matter of fact, I have to correct myself, Richard. I was able to grab my book while you were talking, and so I have it, and I recognize, you know, when I the article that's in the very back, knowing life is precious, and that was a little bit tough for me to write, but you know, I'm all about honesty, so I thought I'm going to go for it.
Why was it tough for you to write?
Well, because it gets to what we were just talking about children and stuff. It's a struggle for me because, in my young age of being 18, there was a child that I had that, I no longer have. And as a result, with my dysfunctional childhood being what it was and all that, I did not have, there wasn't the resources there. It's no excuse. I want to make that perfectly clear because I've dealt with that with God. And that's a whole nother story because I've gone on a couple of pilgrimages, and you being in your faith the way you are, you understand the what can happen on a pilgrimage if you're really connected with what you're going for. And so as a result, I struggled for many, many years with this, having this abortion at the age of 18. And I would have never, if I could go back and undo that, I would, because I look back on how my life was at that time. I like I said, I came from a very dysfunctional childhood and into, I knew more about the birds and the bees by the time I was 12 than any child should ever know. And as a result, moving and becoming a military wife at the age of 18 and going to DC away from everything that I knew at that young age, there just wasn't the support that I had, nor was my husband on board at the time with what was going on. And I learned that, wanting to have somebody love you, you're willing to do anything. And if you feel that you can't be loved, and so as a result, that kind of causes you to do things that you normally wouldn't do, I think. And so, when I wrote this, I think about my little one every day. But I know that little one's in heaven, and I know that pretty sure it would have been a boy. And I even gave it a name. And so I'm at peace with that only because of where God has taken me through the years, and allowing me to live as long as I've lived with what I've been through. So there's a reason. And that's why I say that was difficult.
Well, and of course, there is always a reason for everything that happens in our lives, even if we don't know what that reason is.
Right.
It took me a long time to grapple with and I say this hopefully accurately, with my first and only divorce. I never planned on it, but then again, who does? And yet,
I don't think we all.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, you know, I have tried to stay in contact, but it's also very difficult for me to do that. Not so much because of my departure and what she went through and so on and so forth, but more because whenever I do contact her, it's dragging me back to those emotions, and just, it's not fun to converse. And I have certainly shared with her, just as you have communicated with God with your experience, I've even shared with her, because she is still alive, at least as far as I know. I haven't talked with her in maybe two or three or 4 years, that I never stopped loving her. Because in the 15 years we were together, we had a lot of good times. It was the last 5 years, there was a shift, and I just, I tried. I was one of those macho guys from the standpoint of pride. We're going, hey, I'm an intelligent guy, and we can work this. We'll figure this out,
And that's why it comes back to that statement, the true definition of love is caring about the health and well-being and happiness of another person to a greater degree than yours, than your own. And I think from what I hear, that's what you were trying to do.
Yeah. And obviously there came that moment of that break point where I just said, I can't do it anymore. Now I got to take care of me now, or I'm not going to be around much longer. Because of the stress and so forth. But anyway, it's just a real interesting situation that we all find ourselves in from time to time. Not an area of my life I would change, because it taught me so much. When it comes to all of these different aspects of your life, whether it be your dysfunctional childhood or the experience at 18, or being and it's interesting, you were a nurse as well?
Yes, that's how I got into law enforcement. I actually was a supervisor on a floor with a group of doctors, and we would have a lot of the deputies' wives come in. And I was a single mom struggling to provide for my daughter at the time. And I just needed some extra money. And I happened to get in a conversation with one of the deputies back in the early 70s. And he said, well, have you ever thought about the search and rescue team? And I said, well, what's that? And they said, well, it's, da, 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 da. And you go through a reserve academy and you work 1 weekend a month. And I said, really? Well, I made more in that 1 weekend that I worked than I did in my host position as a supervisor in 2 weeks. And so I thought, I think I need to switch careers. And so that's what I did, not realizing at the time that actually the law enforcement career was the career that was what God had for me.
Do you think that the experiences that you have been through up to that point prepared you to be an officer?
Oh, gosh, yes. I teach, and I have students, and I teach high schoolers. And what I've told them in the past is that you can sit in front of a teacher with a lot of degrees behind them, and they can be as smart as a whip and have all this information. But the best teacher out there along with that is life experience. And if you can survive through the life experience teacher and come up to the point where you're not in jail, you're not a druggie, you haven't lost your life because you committed suicide or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then you have something to offer those that are experiencing the same things that you went through. And that's when I look at it and I say, okay, this is how God brought me through all of this. And when I started writing my book, Miracles of a Child, pointing out different aspects of where I can see my guardian angel and I can see him in play and the Blessed Mother. There's a reason for it.
Yeah.
And I just told my students not too long ago, I said, when I gave the talk on the preparation for death, I said, you have two things that you can do. You can hurry up your death by doing something stupid, or you can live your life the best you can and hope for a long life. But either way, God knows what's going to happen. He's going to know that you're going to do something stupid, like going 90 miles an hour and taking a chance and ending up in a car accident. He knows that, but you don't know that. So it's your choice. You can either live your life full of risk, or you can, I don't know if you saw the movie Solo. It was about this mountain climber who does it without you know, any support.
Oh, yeah, free climbing, yeah.
Yeah, free climb. And he was asked, you know, do you have a fear? And but it's a challenge. It's a surge of excitement that they can accomplish something that nobody else can accomplish. And I think I understand that to a degree, because when I applied for the SWAT team, it was not a good deal because it was dominated by men and they didn't want any woman on there. And I was actually told after I was given the opportunity to at least try that if you so much as even fail or do something that isn't right, you're not going to make the team. And I said, okay, I'll just do my best. And as it turned out, we had our first exercise out at Camp Pendleton, and it was a very hot day. And we had to wear our camis up close around our wrists and our neck because we were going to be crawling through dirt and brush, and there was snakes and everything else. And we were told that if we didn't complete this exercise, that we would not make the team. And so I was partnered off with one of the newer guys that had come on shortly after me. And as we're going through as a pair, I look over and he's going through heat stroke, and I had no choice but to tie the white handkerchief around my rifle and raise it up, knowing that I wasn't going to be able to complete the exercise, but he was more important. And as it turned out, he had been drinking the night before, thought he could come in and do this exercise the next day, but it wasn't the case. So in that regard, I took a chance, but they ended up recognizing what I had done, and I was able to make the team.
Mm. Well, and that's good, because a lot of times in life, we will make a decision that it seems right to us. It seems perfectly appropriate. Yeah, that's the right thing to do. And when you look, then you get your supervisor to come along, and what the hell do you think you were doing? You know, that is not the protocol for the company, and this and that and the other thing. And it's like, what is it that you're not seeing that this person has done? You know, and I it's fascinating even to watch some of the movies and television programs that will focus on situations like that. I'm glad that they do, because at least it shows that there are some people who haven't lost their humanity.
Right.
You know, and I was, a matter of fact, I was, what was it? I was watching this one program where these lawyers, this young lawyer, he wasn't a lawyer yet, but he was in training. He had yet to pass the bar and so forth, but he was still handling this case. And the company he worked for, they told him, you do not go down this particular road when you go in there giving your opening argument and so on and so forth. He went down that road. Immediately, he just went down that road. And of course, they said, well, now you've done it and this and that and the other thing. Okay, so now we got to strategize. I see. So whatever you do, don't go down this road. Well, that's exactly the road he went down. The upshot was he won. He actually won the case. His client was found not guilty and so forth. And the owner of the company, the head of the company, acknowledged, hey, thanks for not listening to me. He gave him the credit that he deserved for taking it all the way to the end of the process rather than pleading it out. And it's like sometimes in our lives, we plea, we'll plead out in as the analogy would go, instead of, I need to see this to the end.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many times that people will relinquish their values or their decisions or their, even their faith in order to make it into the world of materialism. And, it's amazing, especially with what's going on in our world today.
Yeah, the focus has really gotten even more skewed. Although I sometimes think about it from this context that the population continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to wonder, from a percentage standpoint, is it the same percentage per population number that has been happening for the last 100,000, 10,000 years, as far as humanity's concerned. And I have to wonder, too. And then, of course, now you have the media, social media, and of course, everybody's videoing this and that and the other thing and so forth. And now it seems like it's been an explosion and more people are doing these things and getting caught and so forth. And I'm thinking, I don't think it's more people are getting caught. Again, I say that's still the same percentage. I think it's because we're seeing it, almost all of it now. We're being exposed to all of it, whereas before, we weren't connected like we are now.
Exactly. Recently, I'll just share this with you. My husband and I went to see Midway, and if you haven't seen it, it's done very, 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 very well. Mm-hmm. And the thing of it is being a military wife at a very young age, I married someone who did three tours in Vietnam, and it's not taught in the schools anymore about the history behind everything that we see today, that they spend money on making these movies. Midway was so critical in our history. And when I think about, when I sit there and watch that, and I think our men and women are volunteering to go in and put on the uniform and protect this country. But then it seems there's more and more young people, millennials, coming into their adult life where they look at signing up for the military is horrible, don't want to be a cop because they're fascists or they're pigs or whatever, and the list just goes on. The only first responders out there that I don't hear being tagged on too well is firefighters, and God bless them, they're important and you wouldn't want them, but it's the police and it's the military that they seem to be looking at. I do feel that if we took a vote, there would be more people supportive of our military than what it appears, because of the young millennials that are coming up and doing all the destruction that they're doing. But I just wish they would go back into the schools and teach history the way it should be taught.
One of the things that I find interesting, and of course, I wish we didn't need the military. I mean, that's kind of where I come from. I wish we didn't need it. I wish we could just all get along, as it were. But that isn't the case, the reality. And at the same time, I find it fascinating when I do watch some of these historical documentaries, and I hear the phrase, and this changed the course of history. And I'm going, wait a minute. Did you know what the course was? We're going to be, and that's how you can say this, and you're a fortune teller, you can read the future, because these events, they happen as they happen, and we don't have control over them from that standpoint. It's like you say, you know, if the situation with the Midway hadn't happened, and I'm going, but that's what happened. And so that was the course of history. And when I think about the dropping of the two atomic bombs in Japan to end the Japanese onslaught, that didn't change the course of history. That was the course of history. And I think about that more in terms of, and maybe I'm playing semantics with words, but that's what happened. It didn't change anything as far as the course of history. That was it. And at the same time, I know that there were a lot of people, and you kind of alluded to this with the military and the police. There's a great deal of criticism over the historical accuracy of events, especially of the United States' role in the lives of people abroad, let alone here in this country, since this has been a country. And what I'm seeing is that, on the one hand, yes, this country's done some great stuff. But just like you would acknowledge, we all have a light and dark side that is within us. Mm-hmm. And we are sort of taught through certain disciplines to accept that. I'm not saying that we live in the dark side, okay, as you hear from the Star Wars themes. But that's part of who we are, and we have to acknowledge and embrace and accept that that is part of who we are. We don't have to be ruled by it, but it's like we live in a dualistic world, And so I think the problem with people who are really critical of the pro-American in particular, what they would call rhetoric or propaganda, is that the people who are pro-America aren't willing to take a look at the blemishes too. And I think that going to either extreme is really inappropriate, that our military has done some great things. And I have to say that whether I agree or disagree with getting involved in a conflict, what really disturbs me more than anything else is the way this country's government in particular, the citizens are a whole different thing, but this country's government has treated its military post-conflict. And I did some research and found out that this has been going on all the way back to the Revolutionary War. So it's not just a 20th or 21st century problem. It's as old as this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. Whether I agree or disagree with someone's decision to go into harm's way, that's their choice. And I respect it, and I will support them in it. I may not agree with it, but I respect them for their choice and doing it. But what I want to see is the government standing up, stepping up and saying, we've been atrocious to these people. We have asked to go fight our battles. We need to treat them like royalty. You know,
in order to do that, Richard, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think that has to come from the up and coming generation to recognize what you just said. I mean, you're going to be gone someday. What you said is not going to be, maybe remembered or whatever. But the bottom line of it is it's today as we live is what we do that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have our military, as I tell, some of the young people that I talk to, you couldn't. I mean, if you just think about it, it like the article of if I knew what I know now, what would I do different or would I do it different? Mm-hmm. The problem is that we've always been in a state of war, but it's what you do with it and how you handle the different things that come about as a result of it. We couldn't live here in this country if we didn't have our military to defend us and to give us the hope that we're not going to be like a third world country, or we're not going to be like a communist country. But I see that being a challenge with what I see coming up through the ranks of our younger generation.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that all of the generation is like that, because I'm sure there's many being of military families that still will hold on to that patriotism. But what's the percentage? Versus those that are beginning to, down the military and criticize and everything else.
Yeah.
And everything else. So I agree with you, but I also know that we have to have military strength in order to continue to have what we have today.
Yeah. And I think too, another point when it comes to the police force across the country, man's inhumanity to man is going to go on with or without a police force. So my question to those people who criticize the police force is, do you want them or not? Because we can get rid of them. We can absolutely get rid of the police force. Okay.
Well, and
we're
not bringing it in. Can you imagine what our, let's just say the city that you live in, can you imagine just you wipe out all of the first responders as far as the police and whatever other law enforcement agencies are there off the campuses, off the colleges and stuff, and do an experiment for a year, see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I bet you that the crime rate would just go right through the roof. And the same thing would be said, as you've already well said, from a global standpoint, with our military. And again, I may not agree. It's basically the premise of my book, Choices. When I asked my present wife, when she was diagnosed with cancer, I went to her. I says, "Do you want to live or do you want to die? I may not agree with your choice, but I'll support you in it." And that's where we have to come from. This isn't about agreeing with somebody's decision. It's about saying, look, you have the right to make whatever choices in your life you have the right to make. You know, and hopefully it's in support of a civilized existence in this life if you choose to stay here. Because I wouldn't put the same onus on someone who wants to go around committing crimes and killing people and this kind of thing. But it's to me fascinating because it goes back to, I think, it goes back to the two entries that you have in Chaos to Clarity, having to do with Mad Dog Loves the Grim Reaper, as well as knowing that life is precious. And that, I don't know about you, but it sounds to me like you probably might agree with this, that I finally came to a place where I was questioning whether my life had meaning. And I finally came to the realization it does. Because if it didn't, there's something inside of me that says it does. Because if I didn't have that little voice in the inside saying it does matter, then following this interview, or forget the interview, I'm going to go out, I can rape and pillage and plunder because it doesn't matter. My life has no meaning.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to do that.
Right. And the only response that I would give back to what you just said, you may agree with it, is that I've come to understand that every child that comes out of the mother's womb, their life has meaning. Because of the person that gave you that life. You know, we didn't come from a molecule. We didn't come from a spaceship that, you know, just decided to drop droplets of human beings on this earth. You know, if you look at the magnificence of the DNA and all of that that is that it takes to have an individual be totally different from everybody else, that's you have to believe in a creator. You cannot. And so, you know, having, you mentioned cancer, I went through cancer in 2001. And I lost my kidney, my everything, my female organs, all of that stuff. And I was as bald as smooth as a marble, right? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, what do I want to do with this? What am I going to do with this? But I chose, for me, like you said to your wife, do you want to live or you want to die? Once that person makes that decision, you're there to support them. It's not euthanasia or anything. It's that you're to support them in their what they're going through and how bad it might be for them. But in the long run, you do want them to live.
Sure.
And so as a result, we all go through those different things. And I know when I was going through my treatments and stuff, it was quite lonely because I had a difficult marriage at the time, and was, you know, my daughter was away at college, my son was struggling, and it was just a bad time. But in the end, I knew that whatever God had planned for me, that my job was to do what I need to do now according to the people that he puts in my life, such as the doctors and the nurses, and do the best that I can. If God's plan for me is to not do well on this, or if his plan is that I don't do well, then I have to accept that too. And attitude was the most important thing. And since then, I've helped about 6 or 7 people do that walk through cancer because they're angry. They don't know why it's happening to them. And, you know, it's tough.
Yeah. And I have to tell you that I wouldn't wish, my wife went through chemotherapy. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. That is, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, but you know what, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. That theory with chemo. No, that one is a hard one, but nonetheless, you know, she made it through and, she's been free and clear of it ever since. And
what is her first name? And I'm going to keep her in my prayers.
Amrita, Amrita is her name.
Okay. I won't forget that. And I will continue to, add her to my list of people by first name.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I have to say that, and one of the thoughts that came to me was, in reference to your contributions to Chaos to Clarity, how were you chosen as a contributor? Do you know? How did you come in contact with Sacred Stories Publishing? Are they the ones that publish your children's book and so forth?
No, I think it was a combination of the research that the authors did in regards to the plan that they wanted to put this type of a book together. And I think being a part of Biz Catalyst themselves and seeing many of the stories that are, or many of the articles that are written and published, they begin to see how it's not all about, and I don't dismiss this at all, because there's a whole other book that could be written about leadership and in the workforce and all that. But I think in this particular case, there were articles that were written that they felt that could be put into a book that might be something that could help other people that are struggling read what other people have gone through. And maybe, just maybe in an instant, they could snap them into saying, you know what, I agree with this, and I think I can do this.
Yeah.
So,
well, I know
because I write a lot about life's experiences. Mm-hmm. My pen name for a while there was Nightingale, but yeah. So I think that's part of it.
And it's really interesting to converse with people, find out where they're coming from, their philosophical leanings, if you will, and how they have changed over the years. I know that mine have. I even had an interesting conversation many years ago over the preparation table in the kitchen of my parents' home back in Phoenix, Arizona, with my oldest sister. And she was of a very mm-hmm. strict, very... I'll call it a narrow or maybe focused philosophy. And she, of course, was very concerned about my salvation. And I said, excuse me, but my beliefs of yesterday are not my beliefs of today, are not my beliefs of tomorrow, because I am still alive. I am still experiencing. I'm still learning and growing. And I love the quote that somebody gave me many years ago when I was working and I was in my early 20s. And thinking that I knew so much, they said, it is better to begin in doubt and end in certainty than to begin in certainty and end in doubt. And I've really tried to live by that from the standpoint that, yes, there are certain things that I hold on to, certain philosophical points, but at the same time, I'm open to the possibility that there are other ideas, other ways. And and so for me, that's kind of where I'm at. And I still have the utmost respect and reverence for the rituals, traditions, and the ceremonial aspects of Catholicism. That is ingrained in me from that standpoint that, I mean, I love that kind of stuff. And I guess I was fortunate that with my first wife, she was a member of the Byzantine Rite of the Catholic Church, still part of Catholicism. And I actually have a hardbound copy of the liturgy that is in Slavonic. And that you could videotape or video the mass 30 years ago, and basically it would be the same today, because they hold to the tradition and so forth. And that, to me, that's a beautiful thing if you can hang on to it, because we have lost so much in our society and our civilization by not having these rituals and ceremonies and traditions. I think of the Jewish faith and the mitzvah or bar mitzvah for the boys and the girls to become men and women, and so forth. In the Catholic Church, of course, you have the sacraments. You know, obviously baptism and communion and confirmation and so forth. And it's like, boy, those become sort of anchors or foundational points for an individual saying, these are my milestones. See, because I used to think about that. Okay, well, when does a, and this was when I was interviewing people about manhood. And so when does a boy become a man? At 16, when he gets his license, at 18, when he's now illegal to vote. And of course, at that time to drink, 21, when he has his first sexual experience, what, when he gets married, when he becomes a father. Mine didn't come until I was 33. And I kind of knew that that's what that was, that I had finally... you know, and my mother says, well, it's about time. I was 33 and I had this particular experience. What are your thoughts about those kinds of things within our lives that just, I don't know, they make our lives so much richer? and fuller in one sense.
I will tell you this, Richard, that the topic of my faith as being a very devout Catholic and having left the church prior and growing up not even knowing I was Catholic, and where I've come to at this point in my life at 69, it's a whole nother world that I could talk about for hours and hours and hours. I just will say that for me, I know that there's a lot of people that don't like the quote, the organized religion.
Mm-hmm.
Organized, I'm not sure what category they put it in or how they define that. But, you know, when I look at my faith, I don't look at it in the way that a lot of people who look at Catholics look at it. I look at my faith as, yes, I am a Catholic. That's my faith. I mean, that's my religion. My faith is based on the teachings of the church, but it's also based on what I know to be true and just me. And I'm not speaking for anybody else because mm-hmm. you can't speak for other people. And one of the things that I've learned over time too, is that the gift that God had given us, which makes it right for what you just said or for whatever people you want to line up, they have their views and their opinion. The one great gift that God gave us was the gift of free will. He doesn't force us to love him. He doesn't say you have to love me. And as a result, one of the gifts that he gave us way back when at the beginning of time with Adam and Eve was free will to do what we think we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the same sense, he gave us guidelines. He gave us commandments. He gave us different things as a father would for his children that he wants to have them live a good life, right?
Right.
And so when I talk about my faith, it's taken me a long time to even come to know what it truly is about. And the only reason I say that is because for many years, after my, and I shared that earlier, my abortion, I was going through a lot of guilt. And I would go into church and I would hear, you know, the different speakers come up and they talk about Rachel's Vineyard and stuff. And I thought, okay, that's really great. But there was a 9 thing that said, you have to share your story, what you've gone through, especially on your epiphany that you had at one particular point. And I said, no, God, there's other people that can do that. I don't need to be doing that. And he just would not let go. And one thing I've learned that when you're in a tug of war with God, you don't win. He wins every single time. And same way when I was in law enforcement, before I say that, so I ended up becoming a speaker on pro-life, which was very difficult for me to do and having to bring up my own story. But then you fast forward to my career in law enforcement. I saw so much in that line of work that was not healthy, that was not good. And yet the abundance of good things that came out of that was more. Yet if I had chosen to go down the path with a majority of the things that I saw, I would not be worth wearing the uniform at all.
Yeah.
And so I made the choice. And that was based on my belief in God and what he gives me. And so everybody has their views, and you can't force somebody to love God, just like he can't force you to love him.
Yeah.
And so it changes. Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you that in light of your story, that when I was working for the Christian station, I had started to do some interviews regarding mm-hmm. the subject of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to a point where I couldn't do them anymore, because mm-hmm. what I found in the short few years I'd been doing them was that neither side was willing to give any ground whatsoever. And I haven't done one since. And we're talking about probably 30, 35 years. Because what's the point? You know, because
the arguments. I mean, what do you mean by that? So I understand better when you say either side.
It's like usually when you are having a conversation about two different sides of an issue and you're trying to get to some resolution, mm-hmm. usually the sides will begin the process of, you know, giving a little ground here and there. But neither mm-hmm. side was willing to give any ground. period.
Yeah.
And I said, then fine. Then I could replay these for the next 500 years, as long as it's legal in the United States, because it's all going to be the same argument and nothing's changed.
Sure you can. And that's the same way it is today. It's exactly the same way it is today. Yeah. You're exactly right. I agree with you. The only thing that I would say for me and for, you know, if, what's the analogy I could give? It's like if you go to the store and you're hungry and another person comes in and they're hungry and you're fighting constantly for, you know, maybe something that they have that you want or vice versa. Okay, you can do that all day long. But the person that decides to say, I want more than that loaf of bread and I'm going to go for it. At some point, they're gonna pass that, and they're gonna reach it, and they're gonna take it, and they're gonna have more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing with and it might be a bad analogy, I don't know, but the same thing with the two sides of this issue. You're gonna have those that are against it, and those that are for it, based on their views. But if you leave it alone, and you don't continue to either side. Eventually it's going to come unbalanced. You know, one will either win or one will lose, or it'll be a constant butting of heads constantly with their views. But eventually it will change if one person steps back and says, okay, I give up, and the other person goes, great, I'm going to cross over the finish line because you're way back there.
Mm-hmm.
You're right that it's two sides that are not willing to budge, but eventually one side's got to win.
Well, one way or the other, sure, that is probably what's going to happen. But again, it's one of those subjects that I've stayed away from. And again, I've seen a number of movies and programs, and it's like, than I really care to watch documentaries about the Holocaust. I'm not saying, it happened. I'm sorry, but it happened because there are enough people who have been telling the stories over the last 60, 70 years. It happened. Don't tell me it didn't happen. And we got to make sure it doesn't happen again. But unfortunately, but anyway, moving along to some other areas. But this is also one of those subjects that can certainly support and encourage people in terms of coming to grips with realizing that their life is precious, that checking out, whether you do it literally or whether you do it figuratively, saying, I'm just not going to participate anymore, as opposed to taking one's life. Your life is important. Your contribution is important. It's one of the saddest aspects in particular, as we talked earlier about the military. To me, it's one of the saddest aspects of the military when we lose lives. And I think about the lost potential. What could they have contributed to our society if they had only lived? You know, and that's not to say that maybe their contribution was to give their life. Okay, I don't want, you know, but you see what I'm saying is that when people lose their lives, whether it be in the military, whether it be through other confrontations, conflicts, et cetera, through their depression and they just, I don't want to live anymore. It's like, wait a minute, you've got something to contribute.
Right, exactly. Well, on a final note, as far as what I would say in regards to my background, I spent time in foster care, but before that I was in juvenile hall, and that's a whole nother story and aspect. And at that time, being only at the age of 8 and being in a institution, I didn't think that, you know, I wasn't mature enough to say, does my life matter? But I was old enough to say, is this all there is? Is this what life is? So, I've come to know that my life was important and that it was meant to live till the age I'm at now.
Right.
But at the time, you just don't, you question it. You just say, what is my role?
Yeah.
Where do I fit in?
Exactly.
And later with maturity, you go, when you recognize, maybe you say, is my life worth anything?
Right.
And I would have to say everybody's life, the minute you take a breath, you become important. You matter. Yeah. As Dennis Patoko, who is the founder and president of BizCatalyst, said many times, you matter.
Yeah.
And I would say that to anybody.
We have had him as one of the contributors to this work that we're putting together here regarding Chaos to Clarity. He is one of the contributing authors, as are you. Lynn Forster, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing your story as well as your contributions to Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformation. We encourage people to go to sacredstoriespublishing.com and investigate and read more about Chaos to Clarity and get yourself a copy, especially during the year of transformation, the year of perfect vision 2020. That's what I'm declaring it, and I hope that you will too. Before we let you go, very quickly, one thing is that if you should ever find yourself departing from Houston for a short little sojourn out to the West, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
I will definitely take you up on that. Absolutely.
And then we have three final questions for you, but I want to remind our listeners about the radio broadcasts and the podcasts. Podcasts are on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spotify, Player FM, Blueberry, and many other locations. And the radio programs are 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. Monday morning. That's Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. First of the three final questions for you, you have probably addressed them possibly throughout this interview, but I like to ask them directly. The first one is, who is Lynn Forster?
Oh, Lynn Forster is someone that is just happy to be alive, and I am very much in love with my husband, who I have known for 40 years, but only recently married just about 6 months ago. And I am a mother and a grandmother who loves my children and my grandchildren, and I am especially in love with my faith. So that's who Lynn Forster is.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Just awareness to those that may not be at a good place where they are, or may think that they're not worth anything, or that they can't accomplish anything. You hear it all the time. If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish it. But sometimes words are not enough. Maybe stories help. Maybe running into somebody helps. I would say letting people know out there that there's always hope no matter what.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is for the salvation of souls, including within my own family, which is a topic I'm sure that people would want or be curious to know why I would even say that. But that's my life's purpose, is to live a good life for my creator, my Lord, and to save and pray for, or save souls by praying for them and letting them know that prayer is powerful.
Lynn Forster, thank you again for joining us here on the program and your contributions to Chaos to Clarity. It's been a pleasure, and I certainly do hope that we can have you back on again.
Thank you, Richard, and God bless you, and I will keep your wife in my prayers as well.
Thank you so much. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you for listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true, especially during the year of perfect vision 2020. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, and until next time, love, Talal.